Welcome back to the Real Arsenal Deal podcast. This is Rav, your host, recording this on a chilly Wednesday Melbourne afternoon here in Australia, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you are all well, and I hope you're keeping busy, I guess, during this little lull in the transfer window. It has resumed. The second part of the transfer window has resumed now that the Club World Cup has started. And look, although Arsenal have not signed anyone yet formally, there's no official announcement, even though I think there's a few transactions that are effectively done. I think they're just waiting for there to be announced formally. I think all parties have agreed and signed those transactions. I'll come back to them in a moment. I'm referring to Zubimendi and Kepa. But look, there's still stuff bubbling away. It's been a while since I recorded. I believe it's approaching 10 days or maybe even a bit more. You know, time absolutely flies. So I thought I'd hop back on. Every now and then, yes, look, I am keeping abreast of, I guess, the main journalists to follow, the main accounts, like David Ornstein, Gunner Blog, and those usual sources. Of course, Charles Watts. I'm not on Twitter myself. I follow a bit on YouTube, and I'm on Blue Sky. But aside from that, and just keeping things ticking over from the main podcast that I listen to, and I'm sure you do as well, because let's be honest, if you're listening to my very humble, tiny little podcast, then you're well across all the main ones too, such as Ars Blog, Arsenal Vision, and so on. So aside from that, I'm just you know, keeping tabs of how things are developing. I understand from what I'm hearing anecdotally that there is a growing, or maybe not growing, because maybe it's just a vocal minority, I'm not sure, but there is some frustration brewing. I tried to touch on that in my last podcast, so if you listen to that, thank you, and I hope that was beneficial, helpful to you. I won't go into it all again, just the key difference between things like false urgency and perceived pressure. So if you wanted me to expand a bit more on that, please refer back to the previous recording. I don't think things are as bad as perhaps some maybe intimating. I do understand, though, that there's one point. Look, I may as well just get straight into it on this point. The one part that I am a little bit puzzled by is that there's, look, I'm not suggesting this is accurately portraying what's happening within the club, because I'm sure within the club, Arsenal know, do they want Šeško or do they want Gyökeres? That's what I'm referring to. Externally, though, just from what you see and how tweets are worded and how the messaging is being sort of transmitted externally, there does seem to be a little bit of what's the right word here? I've got to choose my words carefully. It seems from the outside looking in that it's presented as if Arsenal still don't know, and I don't believe that for a second. I just don't. I'm sure internally Arsenal know their preference. Arsenal know where their primary targets, their plan A targets. Arsenal have also proven in the last 2 to 3 years that we are prepared to pivot very quickly to secondary targets. I can think of no better examples than we went hard for Caicedo in that January window, and then very soon after that sort of fell apart, we finalized Jorginho. In similar fashion, we went hard for Mudryk, and geez, my goodness me, I got sucked into that one too. I was actually quite disappointed when Chelsea came in and gazumped us, so to speak, and they sure seemed to enjoy that victory lap, didn't they? some of their fans, and anything to get one over Arsenal, I guess. So boy, did we dodge a bullet there, because then very, very quickly after, we finalised Trossard for about a third of the price, and as time has most certainly proven, that was to our benefit. So the point I'm trying to make here is that I very much think internally the club knows that who we want. And if you were to ask me, not that anyone is, but look, I'll give my opinion for what it's worth. This is just me, a random sitting over here, a random 30-year-old, I followed the club for 30 years, but a random 44-year-old Arsenal fan from across the world who I think we're going to sign. I think it's Šeško. I think there's enough noise about him for quite a period of time. We're talking well into last year. We're talking 12 months ago. We went hard for him. I think he ticks all the right boxes in terms of characteristics, profile, age, I think Arteta has specific plans for him. And look, you know, you say what you want about Arteta, and this, I don't want to make this into a whole Mikel Arteta discussion as well, because I've voiced that already for those who have been listening to my recordings for a while. Thank you. He's the one who's got us this far. Right. And he's instrumental. And yes, I understand the question marks. Does he have enough in his locker to get us over the line? I think he does. And I think it will happen next year. But the point I'm trying to make with this is that Benjamin Sesko at 22 years old under Mikel Arteta's coaching, that makes me excited. It makes me excited. He has a proven track record of significantly improving players. I mean, I don't need to go through a whole list, do you? That's pretty much evident. There are players across the continent, England and across Europe, who want to work with him, who want to play for him. Declan Rice is the standout in that. Like that, they want to come and work with him. They're drawn into his vision of football and how he sees. How Arteta sees the players fit that vision of football, and they want to come work with him. And if Sesko wants to come, and there's enough noise and groundwork being done into this deal over the last 12 months, I think he's the one. I think that's the one that we will land. And that's not to say that Victor Gyökeres can't do a job at Arsenal. Not at all. I'm not suggesting that at all. I understand his goal record, like, it is ridiculous. It is ridiculously strong. You can't argue against that. And I know the flip-flopping that can happen when you start to look at his goal tally, his numbers. You can quite rightly say, look, it's in a weaker league, especially in comparison to the Bundesliga. I think there were some stats put out recently by Opta that suggested, I think, 12 or 13 teams are in the Portuguese league are of the caliber of championship level. So look. I can understand that people will heavily discount that goal record, especially the penalties, right? Like, he's done 19 penalties. I don't think Arsenal have had 19 penalties in the last 5 years, right? But that's just the cynical side of me coming out. But look, his goal record speaks for itself. I do think you have to heavily discount that in the Premier League. I do. And also his age, like how adaptable would he be at that age? I don't know. Look, these are understandable question marks. But then at the same time, if reporting about the price points are accurate, there's a more economical deal to be made with Gyökeres, I guess. So, you know, it's which way do you want to, whichever way you want to look at it. And also, in fairness to Gyökeres, when people question the caliber of his opponents and he beats up on them, look what he did to Manchester City in the Champions League last season. That made me sit up and look and take notice as well. That was, he absolutely bossed them. So look, there's whichever way Arsenal go, I'm very confident that the club already knows and they're going hard for that particular target. These transactions, it takes time. Like this is just me with the benefit of my, for those who don't know, who may have just tuned in recently, I was lucky enough to have quite a long corporate career at a senior management level at a big bank here in Australia. And I'm aware that the more zeros, the more commas you put on these dollar figures, the more complex the negotiations are. The higher authorities that need to cast their eye over every term and condition. Once you get lawyers involved at senior levels, and sometimes you can lose a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks just on interpretations of clauses and wording and the jargon that's used. They're just complex transactions. They really, really are. The bigger they get, the more time it consumes, and that's just the nature of doing business. And look, for as much as we want the signings to be done now, and we see City signing players, and Chelsea and Liverpool are closing in on Wirtz and stuff, and yet not every transaction is the same. It's not a one size fits all approach. Like, Arsenal have their targets, and noting that there was a level of urgency for Chelsea and City because they're in that farcical tournament, Club World Cup, whatever it's called. So they had to get deals done for that, given the prize money on offer, right? Like, it's quite incredible that I read a stat that the winner of the Club World Cup will net approximately £100 million. For context, I believe Arsenal finishing second in the Premier League, the prize money, that the share of the prize money from the Premier League will be approximately that amount. And our run to the semi-final in Europe, in the Champions League, I believe that's around 112, 113 million euros. So again, around the 100 million pound mark. And that's across, that's the duration of the season. So for a four-week tournament, the Club World Cup, to win it and achieve that sort of prize money for 4 weeks of football, like it's incredible. Incredible. And you can see why some the clubs who are playing for it are playing in it. You can see why they're going for it. And only time will tell, right? Such an early start to the season for City and Chelsea. Only time will tell when that catches up with them during the season, all those extra fixtures, because the fixture congestion itself is unrelenting. So time will tell. So just to round off my point, I do believe it will be Sesko. I think there's something about this guy that in the next 2 or 3 years he could achieve Ishak levels of eliteness, and if he does, then we will have a hell of a footballer on our hands, and we also don't want to have that tinge of regret that we do with Ishak. Unfortunately, at the time of when Ishak was available, he was at a much more obtainable figure, around the sort of 55, 60 million pound mark, if I recall correctly. It was around a 70 million euro release clause when he was in Spain. Look, there was enough question marks around him then, I guess, maybe injuries or his goal output didn't quite correlate to that. Arsenal had just come off the back of, look, we literally exited Aubameyang that same window, that January. We paid him out of his very hefty contract after extending him just 6 months early at 350k a week. And this is off the back of just in the previous windows, you know, we're trying to exit Nicolas Pepe, 72 million pounds. It didn't quite work. And we had already had Lacazette at the club as well. So we invested heavily in about 18 months in the forward department. I think we smashed our transfer record 3 times in a row. And unfortunately, there are downstream effects to that. When we heavily extended ourselves in the attacking area at a very disjointed time at the club between management changes and executive board level ownership changes, and we weren't quite aligned. So we suffered for many years. Well, we absolutely did. So when people quite rightly look at how much we've underspent in recent years in the attack, it's a legacy issue, because by investing so heavily in the forward group, you know, naturally we then need to invest in other areas of the pitch, and that's just basically what Arteta had to do from the start. We had to, you know, we invested heavily in centre backs and goalkeepers, which has been very excessive, right? And we've gone through a lot of fullbacks and defence and midfield. We've had to spend in other areas, because otherwise they've been neglected by spending so heavily in the forwards. And just one by one, we haven't been able to move some of those players on big contracts. And so yeah, look, at the time, very understandably, we didn't have the capacity or the resources, or maybe we didn't have the appetite, the risk appetite to sign Ishak at the time. So the only reason I mention him now is that I don't want to be sitting here in a recording in 2 years' time, 2.5 years' time, when Sesko, if he's playing for someone like Chelsea or someone else, right, I'm just throwing out an example, and he's hitting those numbers, he's hitting the heights, I don't want to be looking at what could have been, especially if we haven't been able to climb the mountain and nail a Champions League or nail a Premier League trophy that we all want and crave for. So I think Sesko is the one, and I'm just hoping, I'm hoping for an Orn bomb, right? How good would that be soon in the coming days or so, that there's been a significant breakthrough in talks and we can look to advance the transaction. So until then, you know, we're all playing a bit of guessing games as well, aren't we? So elsewhere across the pitch, I do believe Zubimendi and Kepa are effectively done. It's probably just a matter of waiting for the new financial year to commence on July 1st. That might suit all parties to announce it and book it in that accounting period for a more favourable accounting treatment with PSR cycles and whatnot. So I believe that's just a formality waiting to happen. And a couple of weeks will fly in no time, right? Like, you know, time certainly does go go so quickly. So I don't see any reason to suspect that those transactions are going to happen. I know there was that little hoo-ha a week or so ago, coming out of Real Madrid's mouthpiece Marca, saying that they're looking at Zubimendi, and there were some quotes, attributed to Zubimendi about his relationship with Xabi Alonso. And look, just don't read too much into that stuff. Always question the source. Always trace it back to where it's coming from, what the motivations could be, and whatnot. So just I wouldn't get too bothered by that sort of stuff. Speaking of Real Madrid, look, it's not all just about Cesco and Zubimendi and Kepa. There are some other transfer stories just bubbling away. I'm just going to, just in no particular order, just go through a quick few points in my notes here. Speaking of Real Madrid, Rodrigo, that gets me excited. It really does. I've got to be just completely honest and how much I'd love to be wrong on this. I don't think Rodrigo will happen. It's an enormous price tag, absolutely enormous. And do we have enough resources and spending firepower and capacity to be able to nail, say, 70, 75 million pounds for Cesco? It's about the 60 million pound mark to be booked for Zubimendi, 5 million for Kepa. Do we have another 80 or 90 for Rodrigo? I'm just not so sure. I'm not sure. I know Arsenal are in a very healthy position, financially speaking. I know that the club is very well run, very well performing on all the key metrics for PSR and UEFA FFP. I don't know, though, are we willing to extend ourselves that much? Is it at all possible? Or is it a matter of, do we have enough in our capacity to go hard for one of Cesco or Rodrigo, and perhaps make a more modest signing budget-wise in the other department? So, for example, I've seen a combination mooted of Rodrigo plus Ollie Watkins, for example. Now, that very well may come to fruition, and if so, look, I can understand the logic why. To go and spend the best part of, what are we talking, say 80 to 90 for Rodrigo, 70 to 75 for Cesco. I mean, are we talking 160-ish million pounds on? Wow, that'll be phenomenal on top of the other outlays for Zubimendi and whatnot. I wish I wasn't this. I don't mean to sound this downbeat on it. I just don't see it happening. I don't see the likelihood of that transpiring. And boy, how would I love to be wrong. And I'll be the first one to hop back on this microphone and put my hand up and say that I was wrong. But speaking of which, look, another story to watch and oversee, and it certainly does have implications when we start to talk about potential acquisitions and spending this summer, is Thomas Partey. So when I last recorded about 10 days ago, from what I understood at the time, it seemed that all parties were fairly comfortable that an extension that was tabled was going to be agreed. And of course, there's always some negotiations involved in terms of the contract length and options on that and his salary and whatnot. But just the reporting the last 24 hours, it just seemed to suggest that I don't think he's too happy without a pay rise. I believe he wants to stay in London and wants to prioritise re-signing with Arsenal. But you know, there's an opportunity maybe for someone like Barcelona or elsewhere across Europe to try and sign him on a free. So look, I'm of the view that look, as good as he was the last summer, I do believe that it was time to refresh and renew in that position, get a younger, more agile, more athletic profile in that position. So with Jorginho leaving, though, and Partey, and only Zubimendi coming in, that's a cause for concern. We need to sign and invest in that area. I do believe Rice is, as his second half of the season demonstrated, I believe he's that left eight. He was incredible. The way he's running power, the way he bossed the likes of Real Madrid and PSG in moments as well, right? I think that's his position. That's where he and Arteta, I believe what I was saying before in his podcast in terms of the footballing vision, I believe that's what Arteta had in mind for him. And boy, I can certainly see why. So I'm not sure putting Rice back now to the six is in the best interest of the team, as good as he is there as well. Of course, he's world class. So are we a bit light on in that position otherwise? Is Mikel Merino an option as a six? I don't know. Again, we didn't really see him that much. He was signed as a midfield option, and as we all know, that we all know what happened during the season with injuries and whatnot, and he had to be repurposed and did particularly well considering the circumstances. I just don't think we've seen enough of Mikel Merino, the midfielder at Arsenal, to be able to measure where his more medium to long term future holds. So, do Arsenal have the capacity to do what we need to do at centre forward, a winger, Zubimendi, goalkeeper? We also need a defender. We need another versatile defender, as much as everyone can roll their eyes at another fullback. The reality is, I think we are looking for a strengthening there, right? We've seen what's happened with the workload for Gabriel, Saliba. Saliba did a hamstring. He was been out for the last couple of matches of the season. Gabriel had a procedure, surgery for Urien Timber, surgery for Ben White. Tomiyasu's had surgery. Kieran Tierney's left on a free. Zinchenko seems to be spending more minutes in midfield than he does at left back. So, we do need to sign someone there. I just don't know. Do we have, there's so much work to be done this summer. And Arsenal are partly at fault for that because of our inaction in the last two summers. We've left so much to do this summer that, in addition to all of that, that's a very significant to-do list already, right, for Andrea Berta to oversee. In addition to that, for Partey to walk on a free and then having to spend, I'd imagine we're looking at, for someone of the calibre to play at Arsenal, and the calibre of player we're looking for in that position, I can't see it coming cheap. We'd be looking at least, minimum 35, 40, 45 million pounds to acquire someone in that position. Do we have that capacity to do all of this? I don't think we do. I'd be amazed if so. As always, I'd love to be proven wrong. But if we can strengthen across the board in all these positions and really level up and level up the power of our bench, as well at times, our game-changing options to, because we're certainly going for all competitions. Mikel has been very vocal on that, right? So when the fixture congestion starts to hit December, January, whatnot, playing a few times a week, that's the turning point. That's where we really struggled from last December onwards. It started with Saka's injury, unfortunately, and then January we collapsed under the weight of the fixtures, the extra Champions League fixtures as well, the Newcastle. Carabao Cup tie. We just couldn't cope with the workload. I mean, players are human beings, and we didn't strengthen in January, and the season derailed, unfortunately. So we are hearing from the club. We are hearing very positive noises from the club along the lines that we're aware of the issues, and from ownership down, we're going to support Mikel. We're going to support the club. We're going to invest heavily, and we don't want to repeat mistakes. So it's still so early in the transfer window. It's at the date of recording. What's today? June 18th. So it's still early enough that I still believe we will strengthen in all those areas. It's just a matter of at what level, at what capacity. And this is why we hear a lot about Andrea Berta, how he is information gathering as much as possible, because as much as each transaction is treated in its own merits, and of course it does have downstream effects. It has ripple effects, natural consequences to the next transaction. So for example, what I mean is, by signing Kepa for £5 million from Chelsea instead of Joan Garcia for, I think it was close to £25 million, his release clause, all of a sudden we have filled a position with a very high caliber player. By the way, that's about as good a number two goalkeeper you're going to sign for that price point. Name me a better one. I will struggle to think of one. So we've all of a sudden released capacity of around £20 million. So, which is fantastic. That means that gives us more spending power to invest elsewhere in the pitch. But then if we go ahead and we sign Rodrigo for 90-ish million plus add-ons and whatnot, then does that limit our spending power to nail Šeško or vice versa? In acquiring Šeško for 70 plus, you know, the standard bonuses that adds on maybe 10, 12 million pounds, does that then mean that we don't have the capacity to sign Rodrigo? We may have to set our sights on a more modest, in terms of budget, I mean, a lower amount to spend on a winger. Maybe someone like Semenyo comes into the picture. Do you see what I mean? They all sort of correlate with each other somewhat. I wish that we had unlimited resources like some other clubs, because we'd sign them all, wouldn't we? We just sign them all. But I'm living in that'd be me living in La La Land. Arsenal live in reality. So we are a very well run club, and we have budgets. We have finite resources. So we're not going to be able to spend at that level like some of the other clubs can. So and that's why I bring it back down to Thomas Partey again. So maybe the club's view is that noting how much else we have to do, how much business needs attending to this summer across the whole squad, that maybe the club's view is it's just easier to renew him for 12, maybe a 1+1 sort of deal, and then we look to reinvest in that area of the pitch next summer or the summer after. Maybe that's the rationale, and if so, I can totally understand it. So, look, I think I will bring this one to a close. I'm sorry that I wish I could actually have some firm news to bring you and be talking about a actual official confirmed signing and be able to talk about a new player arriving at Arsenal. But we'll just have to hang on for a little bit longer. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for all the feedback. And please feel free to get in touch with any questions or comments. I read every single comment I received. If you have any listener questions, please submit them through. I'll hop back on my next recording in a few days' time, and I'm happy to answer or address any questions or concerns that you all may have. Until then, look after yourselves. I would please most welcome, if you're able to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or like and subscribe on YouTube. It would be tremendous for me. Thank you so much again for your time. Look after yourselves, and I'll be back on to talk to you again soon. Until then, stay safe and come on, Arsenal.